Web 2.0 Summit Program Chair John Battelle moderated a panel about the disruption opportunity in broadcasting. His panelists were Beth Comstock, President of Digital Media and Marketing Development for NBC, Blake Kerkorian, CEO and founder of Sling Media, and Jason Zajac, the GM of Social Media at Yahoo. This podcast is brought to you by the Intel Software Network. Look for opportunity in using the web as a platform, using innovation to drive collective intelligence. The Intel Software Network did just that. Intel Software Network developer communities enable you to create and build innovative applications and solutions. Connect and share ideas today. Join the conversation in the Intel Software Network at intel.com/software. Here's the broadcasting panel with Web 2.0 Summit Program Chair John Battelle.
Beth Comstock, the President of Digital Media and Market Development for NBC. Beth, come on out. Blake Kerkorian, the CEO and founder of Sling Media. I'm going to sit here if you guys can sit. Yeah, sit here. Thanks. And Jason Zajac. Did I get that right, Jason? Did I nail that? All right. The GM of social media at Yahoo, which includes, of course, Yahoo Video. Welcome. You guys either get comfy or you can, you know, whatever makes you comfortable.
I thought these chairs were for like a Jerry Springer episode.
Come on, you guys, get friendly. There we go. You're all pals here, for goodness sake. So the title of this is Disruption and Opportunity. And the reason I wanted, in particular, the two of you to come was that you represent probably the leading edge thinking of a very large, significant, you know, player in the traditional media company with entertainment businesses and massive distribution and so on and so forth. And you represent a guy who wanted to see a baseball game in another city. And so between the two of them, I just am very curious. I want to start with you, Beth. What was the response inside the offices of NBC the first time the Sling Box showed up? Was it generally positive or generally negative?
It's probably a little of both.
A little of both?
A little of both. I think it's exciting technology. You can't help but look at it and go, wow, this is exciting. It serves a really exciting niche. And, you know, we're all about, we'd love consumers to have our content any way they can get it. So, I mean, that's exciting. The oh my gosh, is how do we get our head around the rights issues and, you know, how do we understand who has the right to redistribute our content? And so those are some of the conflicts that we have to work through. It's early. We're all learning. I think that's the...
The one thing you didn't do, as far as I understand, is you didn't send out a cease and desist. Is that right, Blake? You haven't, did you? Is it quiet? Oh, we don't know about it. Are we discovering something for the first time?
We have not received any cease and desist. We've received one nasty letter from a company 6 months before we
from
launched.
From a company?
From a company before we launched.
What company was that?
No comment.
Oh, come on. Oh.
It was a large TV network, but it was...
It was actually quite a nice. Leave it at that. There's a 25% chance it might have been bad.
It actually was a nice letter, and it was actually not commenting on any copy. If I remember, not commenting on any copyright. There was no copyright statement. They were waiting to hear about the Grokster case, and then also just bringing to our attention some of the challenges actually that it imposed on this network. Which was, you know, it's stuff we already knew, but it was, you know, coming from Silicon Valley, I think it's probably not a bad assumption that the Silicon Valley guys don't get it. So, you know, just looking at it and helping us, try to help us understand what the challenges were.
Yeah.
But, you know, besides that, you know, we really haven't had much issues at all.
Right. Okay.
People have to get their arms around a lot of this. I mean, you know, what ends up happening quite a bit is, as soon as a new product, you know, comes out, and it's good to have, you know, forward-thinking folks, you know, in these companies because you have tremendous asset, you know, tremendous existing business. A new product comes around that's so empowering to a consumer, like the Sling Box is, and it's very easy to have an immediate knee-jerk reaction to say, this must be bad. Consumers love it, must be bad. And so a lot of times, I think we all find it takes some time for people to even understand what the heck it is.
Right.
And then start to understand even what the heck it means to their business.
Right.
And there's a lot of knee-jerk reactions early on, but that's about it.
Jason, now, Yahoo and Video, first of all, you have a pretty significant presence in the video business, right?
Yeah.
How come we don't know more about that?
Sure. Well, I think a lot of people certainly know about it. It's interesting. Yahoo Video, you know, dating back to both the acquisition of Broadcast.com, which was and remains one of the largest providers of live streaming
events.
By the way, that's
it's your responsibility for making Mark Cuban. You understand
for
that.
Making him what he is today. We'll say. And I think that so that capability is there. Whether it's huge live events like NASA shuttle launches, sort of one of the largest simultaneous streaming events on the web, or powered by Yahoo. But also, I think because Yahoo has always believed that the goal is to sort of put the media in context. So in other words, if you are in Yahoo Music, there's video there. If you're in Yahoo News, in Yahoo Sports, in Yahoo Finance, has a rich sort of collection of video there. The goal is to give the users the content that they want in sort of the richest, most engaging way in the context that they've chosen. So they've told you, I'm interested in sports, I'm interested in TV, I'm interested in movies. And without sort of taking them out of there and sending them to, say, a central destination, which is the only place on the network you can get the video, we actually allow them to consume it. And our goal is to make it as seamless an experience as possible. And so I think for a long time that served us very well. People felt they came to Yahoo, they went to the portion of the network they wanted to, and the content was there in all the different formats. Obviously, as there's been sort of a lot of visibility about a new form of video destination where you go to one place and you get all the video no matter what it's about, it's made the apples to apples comparisons more challenging. But I still think, whether you look at choose your favorite market research report, ComScore, in the last few months has started doing a really nice aggregated look at Yahoo and all video on Yahoo. And I think it sort of confirms that there are as many people consuming as much video on Yahoo as there is anywhere else on the web.
Well, let's talk about anywhere else on the sure. web for a second.
AOL, Microsoft.
Do you wish you bought YouTube?
Do I wish I bought YouTube, or does Yahoo wish Yahoo bought YouTube? I think Yahoo has a great corporate development group. They're in discussions, usually aware of when any asset is available or is potentially in play, and I'm sure they thought about it. And in general, the key questions are always. And I actually spent a year kind of in the corp dev group before I took over the social media group. And is always about sort of the complementarity of the assets. Do you partner? And we partner very aggressively with content owners, with sort of distribution, whether it's the mobile guys or the set-top box guys. And in this case, there were certain assets that were certainly interesting in terms of audience and engagement, and there were other elements of their business model that we thought maybe weren't such a good fit for Yahoo. So I don't know necessarily where that calculus came out, but I think we're always looking for businesses that are consistent with the direction we're heading and that serve the audience that Yahoo has the best way.
So let me ask Beth, let me ask you, was there ever a discussion in the executive suites at NBC that perhaps acquiring this disruptive company YouTube might be to the benefit of your company?
We have a lot of discussion about YouTube, but there was never really any discussion about should we acquire it. I mean, it's fascinating. You look at what it's done for video in the past year. I mean, it's really, sort of brought video to the forefront. The fact that it showed that there's community around video, we're learning a lot from that. So we get excited about it. It's back to the same discussion we were having
right.
before. I mean, there are also issues about rights and video that's up there, but I don't know that YouTube would have found the right place with us.
Well, now... God, what a great segue. That's exactly the next thing I wanted to ask you is the right place with us. There is a line of thinking, which I think is prevalent in this room, that there really was only one place that could have bought YouTube, and that was Google. And the reason being that it, unlike Yahoo or NBC or a lot of other companies, IAC, News Corp, and they really have no aspirations to be content production companies, and therefore competitive to you. Had you purchased YouTube, it's quite possible you would have purchased an awful lot of lawsuits from the other four or five major media companies because they see you as perhaps being preferential in your use of your content on the YouTube distribution system you had purchased. Do you buy into that line of reasoning, and has there been anybody showing up at your doorstep from Google with a big checkbook lately?
There have been lots of people showing up at our doorsteps, but they show up all the time, and when they show up with checkbooks, we're always happy to see them. But that's part of our challenge, is trying to get an understanding that we have content that's worth something and worth a lot in the marketplace.
Right.
But no specific big checks that we can talk about at this point, or that are real.
Okay, well, that you can talk about is one thing.
That are real.
But do you expect that at some point you'll get a visit from Santa Claus in the form of Eric Schmidt?
I expect to see all the folks coming in. As I said, we've got content that we value, and we would like to be able to find a right place for it.
In other words, YouTube is a distribution system, not unlike Comcast or something like that. And if your stuff's going to be there, you're expecting to get paid.
Right.
Absolutely. Good. It's clear now. But it was no way set aside as part of that $1.65 billion, I'm sure. Blake, we've settled that. What's your view of YouTube, actually? We hear you're an innovator in the same space. Be honest.
I think I commend Chad and the guys. I mean, they're a bunch of good guys who are out. Sometimes I'm not sure if they fully had the whole thing baked out in terms of a business plan, but that's okay. It's actually interesting. I was talking to a friend the other day. It's actually a lot harder to build a company that you can sell for over $1 billion if it actually has a business plan. So, if you want to sell for over $1 billion, it's probably not a good idea to have a business plan. It's true. I mean, it's not a slam to YouTube either. I think it's actually true. I mean, because when
do you have a business plan?
Yeah, we do.
Oh, you're
we're not,
really
I don't, we're worth $900 million. I don't know. $1 billion market cap. I mean, you have to be throwing off, hundreds of millions of dollars at a minimum. I think one of the issues, I mean, just me being a armchair quarterback, looking at it from a Yahoo's perspective, Yahoo's spending a lot of time in building a lot of the close relationships, with the media companies. I do believe that, certainly there's a differentiator when different content is in different locations, but as soon as everybody has the same content, the value is going to be in how it's packaged. And how it's presented, and there is a value in aggregation and presentation, and that's clearly, if Yahoo has any challenges, they're kind of a little bit ahead on that front, but they fill in with the content. Taking a YouTube that, clearly there were things there that were not being approved. People were stealing content and posting it up there, and it's a risky thing if you're a company, not just even from a legal perspective, from a political perspective, and the relationships that a company like Yahoo's trying to build, to go and make a move like that, could really damage a lot. So,
in other words, if I could paraphrase to make sure I'm understanding, for Yahoo to purchase YouTube, given its current approach to video, which is to have deals with companies like NBC, would have been potentially seen as a slap in the face of the partnerships you already have.
Absolutely. It was pretty gutsy move. So, I mean, the real funny thing is, we talk about the UGC, user-generated content. Guys, come on, let's not kid ourselves.
Yeah, well, Colbert clip was off YouTube.
The traffic was about watching copyrighted material, period, end of story. That was what it was all about. And for us to say anything else, and everyone else start going and building new businesses talking about user-generated content, please stop and think about that for a second. I think user-generated content can be very, very compelling, but it's not necessarily $1.5 billion business.
I just want to let that soak in. Now, Beth, I want to ask you another question. Because from YouTube, we'll go to Google. Are you comfortable with Google yet?
Yet. I think Google represents some really interesting opportunities and not quite sure where they're going to go. I mean, I think in terms of what they're doing to the marketplace from an advertising perspective, the efficiency that they're bringing to the marketplace is awesome. It's incredible. We all have a lot to learn, and it's great. I mean, I've come to this from a marketer's perspective. I think that's very, very exciting. I think when I look at the sort of the approach, the algorithms, the way of creating a marketplace, sometimes you can't quite put a value on experiences. Mm-hmm. And so that's the part I say I think it's going to be a challenge for a company like Google.
Google has made no secret of its desire to sell as much advertising as possible, and it's moved recently into the kind of advertising that your company sells a lot of, broadcast or video advertising, display advertising, radio. you must see that as a competitive threat.
Well, it's back to what I said earlier. I love the efficiency of it. I think that's great for the marketplace, to create some open transparency to the marketplace. It should help the market. If the market's really great, it should help drive the premium content. You should find its right price. So that we feel really excited about.
That's a very good point.
But it is. Yeah. It's that experience piece. You can't template that.
Right.
And that's a different kind of a sell.
Right. Jason, where are you going to take... By the way, you must also... I mean, what company, Pop Quiz, largest seller of display advertising in the world, on the web? Yahoo. Mm-hmm. So how do you feel about Google getting into that business? And obviously you're selling video advertising as well,
as they are,
but you do it in very different ways, do you not?
I think the distinctions that were made all along between, you know, performance advertising versus, you know, sponsored search versus display versus video, you know, the reality is advertising and marketing is the process of trying to match a consumer with an offer and a need. And there's always been different kinds of advertisers that have gravitated the folks who initially were the big buyers of sponsored search, now by display advertising, and the branded guys have come into the sponsored business.
Right.
I think the reality is, you know, it's our role at Yahoo, at Google, at anyone who wants to, you know, be a intermediary, right, between consumers and advertisers, to be as efficient as possible, as Beth said. And I think the difference is will really sort of tend to converge over time.
Yeah.
So absolutely they're a core competitor. It's always been, you know, sort of the flip side of Yahoo's core competency in packaging for the consumer is also in sort of packaging and targeting for the advertiser. And that's the way we describe our business, right, which is the provider of services for consumers and advertisers.
Now, Blake, your model, as I understand it, and I don't have a sling box yet because I can't get my Comcast HD to work alone, much less with another box. Your model, as I understand it, is subscription, right?
Or no.
I buy the box and then it works.
We sell a box.
Sell a box and that's it.
Sling box.
Are you ever going to have that box report back to headquarters and tell me what I'm doing and then target advertising based on that?
I think there's a lot of different avenues, you know, for us. I mean, first off, sort of our business model right now is one where it's actually starting to change. Is where we made it really simple at first. Let's make a product that we can make a decent margin on. Hopefully the consumers will love it and they'll buy it. And I don't want to go start wrapping $200 around every single box and making it up in volume later and all those kind of funny, you know, funny tricks you can play. So our model to date has been pretty straightforward. Selling the box for a margin, giving unlimited PC clients or Sling players, if you want to watch your TV on your PC, actually selling the mobile client for a Trio or a Motorola Q phone. It's $29 software download. But we just recently signed a couple of our very first deals with some pay TV operators outside of the U.S., no surprise, a little more progressive. And then we're also about to announce a pretty interesting deal with a big mobile operator. And you can very easily see the model change around where, you know, hey, get your, you know, whatever it might be, get your DirecTV Anywhere or your, you know, EchoStar Anywhere or your Comcast Anywhere type of service. The Sling Box is actually provided as a service, so the model can actually change.
Now,
on the advertising side, it is kind of interesting, and you know, it's been some things that we've explored over the course of time. I just want to make sure that we're delivering just great consumer experiences. I don't want to start throwing up banners and everything all over the place, but there's potentially some ways to make, you know, really, if you see what we're doing, we were always talking for years about bringing the web to the television, and it never quite happened. And what we actually just did is took your familiar television and brought it over to the web. And so the opportunity to make that even a richer, more engaging experience, stuff that we've talked about for 20 years on the interactive television, there's some interesting possibilities that we can do on that side. And, you know, I think that here is where it actually can start end up being a fantastic thing for content owners and for networks. Because there's really two things. One is, when people are using the Sling Box, and we didn't even quite realize this until we looked into it, we're actually, from a television ratings perspective, we're actually a net ad. So if I'm sitting in Bangkok watching my local Channel 5 news, and I was a Nielsen-measured household, my set-top box got tuned to Channel 5, and actually Channel 5 is getting credit for my views. So we found that a lot of networks have seen that as an opportunity, but also then advertisers have seen it as an opportunity.
Have you given all the Nielsen households Sling Boxes? Is that
we should.
Going?
I wish we could stack the deck. It would be nice. It would be nice. But advertising possible, but you know, I think we need to change up the business model a little bit.
Beth, don't you, I'm just putting myself in your shoes. I would get a little nervous about the idea that Blake's making money on your stream, right? This is sort of, this is an ongoing debate as the web sort of mixes and remixes, you know, with RSS, for example, full, you know, it's the same kind of thing. Someone's streaming a full text feed, someone else puts a window around it and then makes money around that. Shouldn't they be paying you for that privilege a little bit?
They should be, yeah. And I think that's
so you guys are going to work it out, right?
We got to work it out.
Yeah. Well, and I and if there's additional monetization opportunities like that, shoot, people should share. Yeah. Nothing wrong with a little bit of sharing here and there.
Sharing,
as long as we get the most.
I'm pro sharing. You guys, there are microphones set up, so please come up to them so that I can pick you out.
When... Look, at the end of the day, one thing that I would really like to try to prove is that. It's looked at, it seems like, in this industry, collective industry, that it's either a product that's really good for the consumer or it's good for the industry. And it's like this, somehow there's a binary, you know, clear line that's drawn. And I think that's absolutely not true. In fact, in this day and age, consumers are wanting more and more flexibility and more empowerment, that if you don't create products, it sounds so logical, but it's seldom practiced. If you don't create products that deliver just great experiences, you're never going to be successful. But just because you make products that are fantastic experiences for the consumer doesn't mean the industry has to suffer. You can actually build a business and a market around it where everybody wins. Mm-hmm. And it's easier said than done, but it's something that I think we want to try to prove.
And I think we couldn't agree more. You have to start with that great consumer experience. Yeah. That's what it's all about. And if the industry isn't with the consumer, well, the industry isn't going to stick around. But if the consumer, if there aren't the economics, the industry's not going to be able to make the great content in the beginning. That's the conundrum we have.
Okay, I've got a question for each of you. We'll get to you in a sec. When we spoke on the phone, you said that you expected, and perhaps maybe you are expected to, build your unit of NBC to over $1 billion in revenue in 2 years and 2 months.
By 2009.
How are you going to do that? What do you think are going to be the one or two or three major revenue lines for you?
Well, a couple of things. I mean, clearly the liberation of video and the new opening of markets with video is a big boom to us. So that's something we see growing.
And that includes video on demand and all those markets.
It includes video on demand. It includes, you know, video on your iPod. It includes, you know, sort of the consumer pull. Wireless we see is taking off. We're very excited. And just broadband. I mean, we see broadband really growing. Direct to consumer through broadband and also advertising on broadband. Mm-hmm. So I would say it's fueled by those key buckets.
Mm-hmm. Great. And Jason, where do you think you're going to, you know, in 2 to 3 years, as Blake mentioned, is the market going to catch up to your approach, so to speak? Or do you think, are there other approaches that you might take?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, in addition to just the continued distribution of increasingly rich content throughout the Yahoo network, the other sort of side of the equation and the other piece of our group and the one that sort of gives it its social media name, the social part, is the true user-generated content, which is the personal and the enthusiast part. So between Flickr, which obviously started out in photos and there's no reason to imagine it wouldn't go sort of continually richer in media, and Jump Cut, which is another company that Yahoo acquired that's very much in the true user-generated content. People do not upload, you know, their whole contents of their TiVo to Jump Cut. They actually come to create video content. And the way we really describe it is we provide the tools and the platforms for people to connect or for communities that are already formed to sort of share their connections and their passions through video or through photos in the case of Flickr. And that, I think, just as you've seen, whether it's with blogs in terms of text or digital photography in the photo area, video is going to become a more and more mainstream way for people to connect, for people to share.
Yep.
Again, on very much the private friends and family side of things, or kind of the enthusiasts, whether they're clubs or they're sort of people who are not out to sort of make money with their first sort of film school effort, but are out to sort of find other people who are interested in similar genres.
Yeah.
And I think the tools there, and it may not be advertising because of the sort of the implications for the experience, but the tools to do that right, and Flickr's a great example, the rates of growth that it's seen in the engagement, I think are really going to create very large and deeply engaged communities, which there's always a way to create
value. And this is exactly why Yahoo purchased Jump Cut.
Yes.
Because you consider it a tool to allow the It's a sort of Flickr-like tool yep. for
Absolutely.
People to work with.
And
video.
It has it's seen you know in sort of tremendous engagement from content owners like Fox Atomic that have created an entire site. It's an independent mm-hmm. film studio part of Fox, an entire site that allows people to kind of engage with their film properties, remix them,
right.
edit them.
Right.
The Doritos campaign that we're doing, to, where there's a chance for people to create their own commercials, the winner of which will air on the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
And I think you know for advertisers, and you talk about sort of the ability to create unique forms, not just a 30-second pre-roll in front
right.
of what may be a 15-second
well, let's hope,
video.
Let's
right?
hope the 30-second yeah. pre-roll has a short.
Yeah. But instead,
short half-life.
You know, it's a very interesting sort of take on the model where advertisers actually provide content that consumers can take and engage with in their own way.
Right.
And if you measured you know, time spent in that kind
oh, yeah.
of a advertised environment versus the fact that 99% of people never even see the banners on the page in a conscious way, it really is an opportunity that
yeah.
we're as focused on as we are in the traditional broadcast.
Quick question, Blake, for you, and because I want to get to this guy. I'm a big fan of the TiVo.
Me too.
But increasingly less so, because TiVo, I think, got kind of bullied and lobbied and almost legislated and sort of threatened into not being what it really wanted to be when it grew up, I believe. Do you fear that?
Oh, yeah. I mean, anytime you're dealing with very large, entrenched players who have sort of they've been able to act as gatekeepers between you know, you as a technology company or product company and the consumer, and they're basically monopolies. You know, it's always a scary thing. And I mean, I think there's a lot of lessons learned, you know, from TiVo's perspective. Not that I wouldn't have made the same mistakes, but you know, there's always a series. And look, at the end of the day, they made quite a lot of money for their investors, and
yep.
you know, they've been successful from the standpoint. I think they've changed the landscape and entertained people. So a lot of people are talking about how they're like failure now. It's sort of funny. But you know, there's a couple of things I think we just have to keep remembering ourselves, and one of them is not to be religious, because a lot of times, as you look in convergence, one thing something is a product, and the next moment it's a feature in something else.
Right.
And if you all of a sudden start to believe that you're the platform and you have this religious feeling, and
right.
and you just curtain off the rest of the world, that's a problem. And I think sometimes maybe we had some religious issues there. I think in terms of, you know, people wanting to work with us and partner with us and license our technology or whatever, we have to embrace it.
Great, great. Okay, we have a question over here.
Ben Schachter from UBS.
Hey, Ben.
Hi. Just a question about how Yahoo works with video, but really relates to the question of syndication and copyright issues. So when you're on Yahoo Video, oftentimes it points you to another site and says, here's a still image, but this video is housed somewhere else, and then you watch it. But you go to a YouTube, and they actually show the video, and then if John wants to put up a video on Searchblog, he can put up a video that's actually housed at YouTube but shown through his site. So how do you think the issues resolve around copyright issues if John makes money off of having that copyrighted video on his site, and the money went from the advertiser to Google to John? Who's responsible, and how do some of these issues play out?
So there are a couple of different comments and questions there. I think what you described first, and just to clarify for folks, there are at least two very different experiences on Yahoo Video. Yahoo Video started out as Yahoo Video Search, which crawls the web and has an index of tens of millions of videos, just like a web search index has in an index of billions of web pages. And so when you get that experience, when it points out, that just means that as part of our search franchise and the value that we offer to sort of try to help people discover information anywhere on the web, that's what that's doing. It's pointing you off to somebody else's site and just providing discovery. We also allow, just as YouTube does, and we have tens of thousands of people uploading hundreds of thousands of video clips directly to Yahoo Video, and those are also displayed basically in parallel with the search results. Our mantra when we launched the upload feature was that it was completely open programming. The goal was to be as comprehensive as possible, and if you did a search for Tiger Woods, you might get the clip on ESPN's site that we would point you to. You also might get a clip that someone caught, you know, outside the gates of the British Open, and they happened to be chatting with him and capture it on their Trio. So our goal was to provide access to the widest range of video. In terms of the second part of your question, which is how does the syndication model work, I think, you know, again, that's a great question. You can do the same thing on, whether it's on YouTube or a Google video or Yahoo video, and embed those videos on other people's blogs. And if you read the terms of service, they're pretty much virtually identical on any, which is when you as a user upload your content to any of those sites, you give the site the right to syndicate your content out there with no explicit commercial relationship. I think in some cases, publishers who feel that they have a brand and they deserve to be compensated negotiate something outside the normal user terms of service and don't allow that kind of embedding or syndication.
That brings us right back to that Santa Claus visit. Really, at the end of the day, that stuff's going to be available on the web.
Yeah, just how you choose to monetize it,
how you choose to monetize it, and whether or not you're going to allow it to be on YouTube or on Yahoo Video or wherever.
And there are plenty of sites, you know, Yahoo and Google both do it in terms of syndicating search ads along with search results generated from third-party sites. Sites like Rever and others insert an ad in a user-uploaded video such that even when it's syndicated to a third-party site, the revenue gets tracked back and split three ways between the publisher, the syndicator, and the original uploader.
Yeah.
So I think you'll see a lot of these, what I call kind of multi-level affiliate relationships throughout the web.
Got to be brief.
Okay, one thing that I just hope for, you know, is that that as we move into this new era, and there's going to be jockeying for position in terms of who becomes sort of that aggregator, you know, of the internet, whether it's a Google or a Yahoo or Microsoft or, you know, piddly company, you know, other little companies like us. I'd hope that we don't live through the same mistakes as happened in the past, which is stifled innovation, which is creating some form of a monopoly,
right,
where these big companies are coming in and hopefully they don't just all corral it. Content is available through multiple outlets, and so there's more and more innovation.
Are you saying you're worrying a little bit about...
I'm worried that there's some big companies coming in who can write some pretty big checks, and they can start to cordon off, I think, you know, the industry.
You want to name any of them?
Yahoo. No, it's not yet.
All right, we'll get into it. Obviously, this is a dialogue that we're going to continue, and next year I'm sure it will have changed 100%, but it'll be just as fun. And I want to please join me in thanking this panel for coming.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Beth Comstock, Blake Kerkorian, and Jason Zajac at the Web 2.0 Summit 2006. This podcast is brought to you by the Intel Software Network. Combine the knowledge of the Intel Software Network and developers in the community to keep up with the new paradigm of software development. The Intel Software Network developer communities on mobility, manageability, and multi-core provide resources and best practices that enable you to create and build innovative applications and solutions. By connecting with fellow developers, you gain collective intelligence in anticipating and addressing potential issues. Connect and share ideas today. Join the conversation in the Intel Software Network at intel.com/software.